You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
It's Monday, so it's time for Shapiro World with David Shapiro from SASFIN in Johannesburg. David, it's that sort of time of year where the Northern Hemisphere is really just not interested anymore. I mean, here we are coming up to August, which is the peak holiday month, and I get the feeling that nothing is going to happen. But on the other hand, something could happen because we've got the FOMC meeting on Wednesday. In other words, the US interest rate decision. And also we've got the non-farm payrolls number, the US jobs number on Friday as well. So a week that should be very quiet actually could turn out on the last 3 days of trading to be actually rather significant.
And how? So you've got jobs Friday, Fed Wednesday, tomorrow trade talks start. So there are quite a few things that can swing things around. And of course, dominating the news is Boris Johnson. So that seems to be the main issue at the moment. But those things can turn around. Look, I'm just looking at the job forecasts, and I don't know how people get to forecast how many jobs are going to be created. You know, it always staggers me that you've got models that can look across the whole of the United States and decide exactly how many people are going to be employed. But you're still looking at healthy numbers in the plus 150,000, you know, which is still, I mean, at this stage of economic growth, a very healthy number. And I think each person that gets a job becomes a potential consumer. So, you know, the U.S. economy is still ticking along pretty nicely. And it's reflected in the stock market. Although the big story, and I can't really, I can't really comment, but who knows whether it's going to be 25 points or 50 points. You know, I'm really not in a position to make any forecasts, but I can listen to the debates.
Whatever the figure is, whether it be 25 or 50, I think 25 would, the market would say, well, we're expecting that. If it's 50 basis points, then they'll say, that is disgraceful. He's either playing to Trump's tune or there is something about the US economy that we don't know about. So I think 25 would be a neutral to downside figure. A 50 basis point cut would be an initial spike. And then after that, people say, wait a second, this is wrong. And then the market would come down again. So I think both ways the market's going to come down. But that's just me as a broadcaster.
You know what? We do for some kind of a slowdown. We're coming, I won't say to the end of the results season, but we've seen the main technical companies coming out with their results. And I'm not sure if there's any other company that's going to come out and be able to sway things or swing things around. Lizzie, I must just point out one thing while we're talking now. I just saw on Bloomberg's a headline that Jacob Mabuza has now been appointed acting CEO of Eskom.
No.
I don't know if you picked this up. It's just come through now. He's the telecom man. You know,
yes.
He is the telecom man. Turned telecom around. So once more, I think Roel Causer was put in charge of the PIC, and I think you're getting a businessman now being put in charge of Eskom. Whether it makes a difference or not, it might have some psychological impact. Remember, we're now here trying to offset the negative comments that are coming out of Moody's and Fitch, and I think government trying everything in their power to try and appease people or try and appease investors. But just brought that up because it suddenly flashed on the screen.
Yeah, exactly. He's got a checkered history, hasn't he? I mean, he's not exactly squeaky clean when it comes to the media anyway, let's put it that way.
No. Look, he's all credit to him. He's done okay at telecom. You know, he's swung a giant around. He's pushing it into more the mobile side, moving away from voice and moving away from landlines, and that's still a long way to go. So, we'll see, but it's an area that's going to take a long, long time to swing. I think that things are worse there than government care to admit. You know, when someone says we need 450 billion, you can always add on another billion. You know that from history, that things never come within budget. So I still think we've got issues here to face before things do turn better, if they do turn better.
Well, they will eventually, of course, because these things are cyclical. Well, sometimes, in the case of Zimbabwe, the cycle lasts a little bit longer than one might have expected or wanted. I was speaking to a chap called Davy Root, the chief economist and founder and director of the JSE-listed Efficient Group. They're delisting They announced today that they're delisting from the JSE Securities Exchange, and I've just conducted an interview with him, which you can listen to on strictlybusinesspodcast.com or indeed on sharenet.co.za. And I asked him about this, and he said, you know, it's quite expensive for a company like ours, which has got a small free float and doesn't get much interest. We're making lots of money, but nobody's interested in us because we're too small, even though our numbers are very, very good. So, and it's just very expensive for us. And also he said it's easier to raise money elsewhere, less expensive to raise money elsewhere than on a stock exchange. And he put forward the idea that the JSE and these small exchanges, not NASDAQ and S&P and New York Stock Exchange, etc., not them, but the smaller exchanges may in the future become obsolete because it's easier to get money elsewhere. And I found that quite interesting. Have a listen to the interview, but what are your initial comments?
No, he's probably right. You know, what's interesting about that is that Sasfin, for whatever reason, and I've got no explanation, I know that we have a share. Somewhere down the line, there might have been the idea that we could get closer to them. I'm talking Sasfin Wealth. So we're actually involved in that. I think we own about maybe 20-25%, I'm not sure, of that company.
Yes.
But, I mean, it's silly. You know what happens? I mean, you're there in the public. It's probably a very good small business. Maybe it's not growing. Maybe in these kind of circumstances, very difficult to grow. But it does, you know, it still means that they can make a decent amount of money with a steady client base. And the actual costs of putting yourself out there, having to produce results for shareholders, watching your share price goes nowhere. I find very little sense in actually companies like that. Lindsay, it's going to be the first of many.
Yes.
I think they're going to be buyouts. They're going to be buyouts, as we saw with Pioneer Food, maybe bigger companies like that, which are trading well below their underlying asset value, where private equity wants to take it, work on it, not pushed by quarterly earnings forecasts. And then little businesses like that where it pays to go actually private and just run without the public seeing what you're doing and inspecting every decision. You get the Theo Buertas, and I'm a supporter of Theo Buerta, who starts to question what the executives are paying themselves and all issues like that, which as a tiny company you don't really need. Not that that applied to Efficient Group, but generally to businesses.
Yes.
So it's unless you're a mammoth company that needs huge amounts of cash, I tend to agree. You know, a loan capital is a lot cheaper in the short run. In the long run.
The rand has gone to 14.22. It was 14.32 just, I think, on Friday afternoon after the rating agency gave us a thumbs down again, David. But it's an important move from 13.80 to 14.30. It's a big move in percentage terms. We're used to that with the rand, but it's significant for the economy, I think.
And how? You know, it's reflecting nervousness about the economy. The move that we've seen today is actually the pound's become under a lot of pressure.
Yeah.
You know, the pound's fallen below 123, forecast is 130. So we're benefiting from that. You know, when the pound goes weaker, even though there's not much happening to the dollar, that also tends to give us a bit of a boost. What's also given us a bit of a boost, because of the pound's weaker, a lot of shares in the UK that are international companies that earn a lot of money outside of the UK and are not directly linked to the UK economy, they just happen to be listed there, have all done very well. And that flows through to our market as well. So, you know, Boris is actually helping the rand and he's helping the SA market, just putting an underpin against that. But I think, take that away, I still think there's mounting worries about Fitch and mounting worries about whether Moody's are going to hold on and how long it's going to take them before they actually downgrade us. And that means that will initially reflect in the rand, probably in equities. I don't know, the bonds might be a bit slower to respond to it because I think a lot of it has been built in already, you know, into the bond market. But it puts us in a very weak position and also makes it a lot harder for us to raise capital. When we do raise capital, it's always going to be at a higher level, in a higher yield.
Let's talk about Boris Johnson if we can now, because he has come out, on the front page of the Telegraph this morning, telegraph.co.uk, which is a notoriously Tory or conservative newspaper, said that he's about to embark on the biggest ad campaign since, I can't remember, since World War II or something. Anyway, he's going on an ad campaign to prepare Britain and the population of Britain for a no-deal Brexit. So if he's spending all this money, government money, taxpayers' money, on an ad campaign in preparation for a no-deal Brexit, that means in his mind he's got a no-deal Brexit, which I don't know, David. I think that the reason that the pound is at a two-year low now is because of that. I mean, if there's a no-deal Brexit, we're into uncharted territories here. This is terrible for JSE-listed companies that do their business in Britain, and that's probably the focus that we should be focusing on.
Well, you know, that's quite interestingly, it's when you go through it, it's only a handful of businesses. You mean local businesses that do business in the UK?
I mean, yes, for example, Investec.
It will be, It was going to hurt Investec. It should hurt. Funny enough, they're slightly better today, but it would hurt the banks, mainly. I don't know what trading companies there, but a whole lot of others that just use the UK as a base, AstraZeneca and so on, are all actually up. Diageo, some of the pharmaceutical companies, you know, Vodafone. Well, Vodafone's up for another reason. Unilever, Royal Dutch Shell. Funny, they're all doing pretty well. But I think from the financial point of view, and also for some of the property companies, I think the pressure's on them. You know, a lot is already built in. But you're right. You know, he is embarking. He's getting the public ready for this. He should have done this when the 2016 referendum, you know, maybe kind of warning people what this meant. There might have been a different outcome, but he is, you know, they're propping up the borders. In other words, I don't know whether they're not security guards, but generally customs officers there, you know, making sure that they can, the flow of goods can go through a lot faster if there is no deal with the UK. The big issue is over Ireland. And so we're into uncharted territory. No one's really quite sure what this is going to mean down the line. You know, you can't forecast what holdups are going to take place at borders and how long it'll take to clear goods, etc. Things that were just taken for granted or used to move freely. So I think Britain's in for a little bit of a jolt. And I suppose it affects tourists as well. I don't know what the story is there. You know, if you were used to having an EU passport, are they just going to concede in this now? You know, when you had an EU passport, you would just flow through into St. Pancras or wherever you were landing. You would just walk through the EU gate or something. Now, are there going to be more queues at customs and have your fingerprints taken and all those kind of issues that we have to suffer when we go to the UK?
I'm looking at my passport now. Actually, it's a little bit beaten up because it's due for renewal in November of this year. But it's a European Union passport. But at the bottom, after the number, it says here, United Kingdom of Great Britain and Northern Ireland. But it's European Union. And that's going to change for me. And I'm going to have to queue with South Africans from now on to get into Britain, which is a pain.
In the butt.
Exactly. what else you see,
and you're going to get visas as well, you know, which also takes time. It's so that's where a lot of these issues they've been thought about, but they've got to staff up now and get the computer systems and get all of these things ready after decades, you know, well over a decade, almost two decades of free movement, and they've got to have rules for the people who are already there. You know, people who are already working under EU passports or under the freedom that existed before. So, I mean, they're a massive amount. And old Trump's rubbing it in. You know, he's loving it. Do deals with us and so on. So,
let's have a look at the Stock Exchange News Service today. I'll do that later on with the broker. But ArcelorMittal South Africa updated trading statement for the 6 months ended the 30th of June. I can't believe the share is R2.64. I mean, it's up 1% or so. But I still, every time I look at ArcelorMittal, I think this used to be ISCOR. This used to be a giant company. Yeah. Not anymore.
No. Got a market cap of $3 billion. Wow. So, I mean, you can buy all those smokestacks and all the equipment that lies there. You can buy their stock, everything, for about $3 billion, which is probably just a little bit more than Sasfin. Nah, I think we're about $1 billion, but, I mean, it gives you an idea it sometimes it staggers me that these companies can be valued so low. But it is a reflection of profitability. You know, they're making losses. So they're chewing up, they're chewing up money. And of course, you don't want to pay for companies that don't give you profits, you know, that actually give you losses. So it means that they're selling things for more than they can make them or more than they can buy them. That's really what it means. And therefore, you write down the assets to those kind of levels.
Yeah.
But it's a reflection of the SA economy as well and the global economy. Obviously, there's nowhere to export their steel into and there's no local consumption. So pretty difficult situation. But they're not unique. They're not unique in the SA economy.
No, they're not. Anything else you're looking at? I mean, I noticed Discovery has been all over the place recently because of NHI. I mean, it's the other thing we haven't spoken about. NHI is not going to happen, David. It can't happen because there's no money for it.
No. You know, those are plans. I'd also like to be a administrator or an official in government and spend my time drawing up these plans, having no idea how we're ever going to implement them or where we're going to find the money to implement them. You know, it makes you feel important and it makes you feel, gives you something to do and justify your salary, you know, which is plus your pension that you get. But at the end of the day, these grand plans are not going to fly. There just isn't the money. There isn't, you know, there's not the money around. You know what's interesting is that you mentioned Discovery because I think on Friday they hit a they traded below 130, which was for me a multi-year low. They've bounced a little today, but I don't know what they're pointing to. You know what this all means. Maybe the delay in getting the bank going. Maybe worries about their profitability, but they're just one of a number of other businesses that fell as well. You know, Liberty, Sunlum, Old Mutual, all of those hit 52-week lows on Friday. They bounced off that, you know, they bounced there from those levels today. And a small bounce, but I think in line with the rest of the market. But there are a number of companies that continue to worry me. Aspen down another percent, Cap. Yeah. So SA Inc., yeah.
Some people are saying that Discovery is the next Aspen. I mean, maybe not to the extent because of it's a slightly different one, very, very different business model. But some people are saying that it could be the next Aspen. But when you listen to that interview, which I hope you will do later on with Javi Root from the Efficient Group, he talks quite brutally about the South African economy. And this is a man who was attacked quite nastily, him and his family. And he survived. He was close to death, but he survived and he still stays in South Africa. But he's delisting from the JSE. And I asked him, and you'll hear it in the interview, if he would consider leaving. And he's, for the first time, he sort of conceded that he might do leaving South Africa. And this is a proper boykie, as they say.
I've followed him for many years. I like his approach. He's always, as you say, he's been pretty brutal because he's a very smart man. You know, he might come across sometimes as, when I say rural, you know, sometimes his accent is a bit, a bit rural in that sense and that. But he's no fool. You know what I mean? And he's not pandering to anybody. He doesn't work for a big bank where he's scared to make statements in case the government start to take action. So he's not an absolute economist. He's not Standard Bank. He's not any one of those Nedbank or Investec economists in that. So he says it like he sees it. Like Mike Schuster is also another person who I like to listen to who's pretty, pretty straightforward and down the line. And Darby has always been very honest and open about about issues here, highlighting inefficiencies within the government and what this all means. And I think he's pretty close to the mark. I think when we go through results, you know, when you start to analyze results that are coming through, you start to pick up those statements. And you know, to me, there's a grave worry in how SA Inc. is actually performing. Especially down at the level of ArcelorMittal, you know, the smokestack type companies. I think those are very worrying. So you know what's interesting as well, and I love to play with numbers. Do you know that, Lindsay, at the top of it, you remember 2008, round about March or April, that's when we started to see cracks in the subprime market. And that started to get – that knocked the market right through for about 6 months where we bottomed down about September or October, November around about 2008. We lost 45%. You know, the market lost 45%. This was termed as the great financial, the great financial crisis, whatever it was. And we bottomed for another few months and then started to pick up 09 when governments took started to take action. We lost 45%. Go look at the JSE today. You know, if you pick up the JSE, you'll find a number of businesses that over the last few months have lost 45% and more. And yet it's overshadowed and overmasked by the top end of the market, the Naspers and British American Tobaccos and all those international companies which make up a large weight of the index. You know, they've saved us and kept us stable. Take that away, you'll see a completely different picture on this market. Brutal. You use the word brutal. It's absolutely brutal what's happened to a lot of the wealth in smaller and medium cap companies here.
Yeah, it is. And the difficulty we have now is that the political enthusiasm that overwhelmed us 18 months ago has now completely gone and turned in the opposite direction. It's become pessimism, and I really don't see that there's any difference with Cyril Ramaphosa. Mm-hmm. And in fact, Davy Ruart in that same interview says he is a weak president. He doesn't blame the president himself, and not directly, not overtly, but what he does say is this is a weak president. In other words, he doesn't have the power to do it. So 18 months, it's all gone, and we're back to square one.
Yeah. I think, you're hearing Davy Ruart. I know that Johan Rupert is making headwaves. Making waves with his interview in an article in the Financial Mail this week, which is an extract from a book called The Stellenbosch Mafia. And Rupert was never the Stellenbosch Mafia. He's born and bred down there. It was more the outsiders that came down and settled in Stellenbosch that I think they made up the mafia.
Yes.
But I mean, what he says about South Africa as well in that interview, and he's been quoted in the FM, is also pretty... he's glad his kids are in England, and I think he's come under personal attacks as being the face of what was white monopoly capital, which is nonsense. You know, he's done an enormous amount for the country in the companies that they run, in the number of people that they employ. But it begins to get on your nerves, and I think it's beginning to weaken the resolve of people who used to be, optimists here, who wanted to stay, wanted to make it a difference. And I think they're starting to say, what can we do? We've tried to help. We can't. Why do we have to always be attacked personally? Let's go somewhere where we can live in peace.
Exactly.
I suppose Davy would end up in New Zealand. I think he's got family there or thereabouts or relations in that. I'm not sure where old Davy would end up.
Well, we'll see.
Johan's got enough money to go anywhere.
I think Johan Rupert can do anything he wants to do. Anyway, let's just read the first couple of paragraphs on that article in the Financial Mail. Good article. Johan Rupert, the chair of Remgro and Richemont, who has always been vocal about his loyalty to South Africa, his private plane, in brackets says here, bears the national Springbok symbol, has started to doubt the country's future. Mm. His children live in England. He thinks it's better that way. And he goes on to say, when they are here, they couldn't go out in public without being insulted. It affected my family, he says. That's a damning indictment.
Yeah.
It's a terrible, terrible couple of paragraphs I've just read.
And he can't go back on that. He said that in the interview. That would have been checked with him. I don't think the publisher would have made it without him least having a say. So, I think he's pretty forthright about his sentiments. So why should he walk in Somerset West or wherever the Rupert family resides and be insulted and, read press headlines which insult him and for whatever reason. And yes, he's outspoken, but I don't think he's done anything illegal or anything that deserves that kind of, that kind of treatment. It's a reflection of what's happening. When we lose the Davy Ruarts and the Johan Ruperts and people of that character, it doesn't do the country any good. We don't want to lose our rugby players. We've still got sufficient there. I mean,
it was quite a good result on Saturday morning, wasn't it? That final try and that kick to level the scores at 16-all. That was remarkable. I mean, the
pressure
we still
that produce
that
man them.
Was,
We still managed to produce wonderful rugby play. I mean, we were slightly outplayed, but the results the results just show some South African determination. But we still got plenty of rugby players. That's one thing. They don't seem to be leaving. I know a couple are ending up in the south of France, in Toulouse or in those kind of places, or even in the UK. But still, very, very good.
Moving on from one third world sport to a proper sport, and that's football, of course, David. Arsenal, I think, are signing a person from France, from Lyon, I think it is. Is it Lyon or two? Lille. From Lille, yeah. 72 million. Never even heard of him. 72 million quid. I've never heard of this little chap. Who is he?
I don't know, but he runs fast. That I do know. He's a speedster. I just hope he can make a difference. And he can feed the two strikers. Arsenal need something, and they also need to appease their fans. I think the fans are getting very angry and very, very despondent. And I think money needs to be spent so that they can at least line up against some of the better teams. Having seen them last season just fade away, I think big changes need to be made. So they've got a couple of players on loan as well. Made a few purchases. I just hope they can make a difference. What's sad is that Arsenal's academy has always been very, very good. When you look at their results in the leagues, you know, the under, I don't know what, the under 17s, 19s, under 21 or thereabouts, Arsenal always hold their own in those kind of leagues, even with the women. And yet, once it comes to senior, those chaps just seem to fizzle away. And just never reach the kind of levels that you would expect academy to produce.
It's called money. It's called money, David. When you're young, you get a good contract. You're going to get 2,000 or 3,000 quid a week or something, and then suddenly you get propelled to 50,000 to 200,000 a week, and you think to yourself, "Well, now I've made it. That's exactly what I wanted." Mm. And if they don't like it, and the crowd doesn't like it, and the manager doesn't think I'm doing well, then my agent will sell me to Napoli or to Juventus or whoever it is, and I'll get even more money. It's a money thing.
Yeah, it is. But I mean, none of our chaps have really done. You know, you thought that chaps would emerge, but if you look at the composition of the Arsenal side, you know, there's very few that have come through the ranks there, and those that have are marginal type players, and that's a sadness. Anyway, we'll see this season. We've got lots to look forward to.
Yes, we have. I think the Community Shield starts on Sunday or something like that, isn't it?
Who's playing now? Who would?
Manchester City, obviously, versus.
That's what it's going to be. It's Liverpool, not going to be Liverpool. I don't know. I hope it's not Watford or someone like that. Because they were runners-up. I mean, that's in the cup. So I hope they take runners-up of the league and not runners-up of the cup.
Anyway, the point is that we've got the Ashes starting on Thursday, England-Australia. We've got the football season starting to kick off this weekend. It's going to be absolutely fantastic. David Shapiro is from SASFIN, and that was Shapiro World. That podcast was proudly brought to you in association with sharenet.co.za. Visit strictlybusinesspodcast.com and subscribe to receive exclusive content straight to your inbox.